Welcome back to the Psalms, everyone. The heartbeat of Psalm 68 is in its first three words. May God arise. This one is a journey across time with some serious elevation, so lace up your hiking boots. There's also some battle on this journey, a little gruesome at one point, so kids, check with parents, and those with trauma, be aware. Now, most scholars connect this psalm to David bringing the Ark of the Covenant up Mount Zion and into the tabernacle in 2 Samuel 6. As he does, David looks back to the Exodus, when that same Ark led the people through the wilderness. And he looks forward prophetically as he foreshadows the ascension of Christ and even into end times. God is the same yesterday, today, and forever. I should note that among scholars, parts of Psalm 68 are notoriously difficult to interpret, so we'll do our best. Let's dive in at verse 1. May God arise, may his enemies be scattered, may his foes flee before him. That powerful opening is nearly a direct quote from Moses in Numbers 10. In the wilderness, whenever the ark set out, Moses declared, "Arise, O Lord! May your enemies be scattered." As David brings that same ark up Zion's hill, he remembers. And the visual is stunning. But more than just a battle, I believe David sees all the battle that evil stirs against our souls. And upon that battlefield, just when it feels like the world will overwhelm you, God rises to his feet and his enemies scatter. I can almost see it. The king stands. And power rises with him. And as his grandeur increases, his enemies run. Those who love their darkness flee from the light. It's a great memory verse for those times when you feel the darkness crowding in. Recite the verse, flip the lights on, and let the darkness scatter. In verse 2, may you blow them away like smoke, as wax melts before the fire. May the wicked perish before God. The scene here is victory. The wicked make their stand, but God is triumphant. The enemy flees. And notice the repeated words, before God. Verse 2, may the wicked perish before God. As God rises in holiness, the arrogant and rebellious stand before him and perish. But may the righteous be glad and rejoice before God. May they be happy and joyful. The word righteous means right with God, having a right standing before God. God stands in all his holiness, and the righteous belong there. No pride, they didn't earn it, but there is joy and praise because God is victorious. And wonder of wonders, he has made us righteous, and we can stand with him. In verse 4, rejoice before him. His name is the Lord, a father to the fatherless. In verse 4, rejoice before him. His name is the Lord. A father to the fatherless, a defender of widows, is God in his holy dwelling. One of my favorite verses. It's a declaration of God's nature. He is father to the fatherless. God sees the impact of fatherlessness on a broken world. And he's moved. He steps in. He fathers. He defends. And when your heart is moved for the lonely, orphans, and widows, that is God's heart working through you. There's a lot of war in this psalm, and war creates orphans. But here is God's heart. And I love verse 6. God sets the lonely in families. That's no small task. The lonely have some complex issues to work through. And family? Well, family is just complicated. Even church family. Setting the lonely in families is no fairy tale ending, but it can be the beginning of healing. God sees our brokenness and moves us into healthy community. And those who create that community for the fatherless and lonely of all kinds move to the rhythm of God's heartbeat. Back in verse 6, he leads out the prisoners with singing, but the rebellious live in a sun-scorched land. War leaves orphans, and war takes prisoners. as do all the battles of evil. God leads those prisoners out into freedom, but the stubborn rebellious live far from God. Then in verse 7, David turns and speaks directly to God and remembers again the Exodus. When you, God, went before your people, when you marched through the wilderness, the earth shook, the heavens poured down rain. Before God, the one of Sinai, before God, the God of Israel. Same two words, before God. And in remembering God's mighty works of old, we trust him for his works today. You gave abundant showers, O God. You provided for the poor. And verse 11 is intriguing. The Lord announces the word, and the women who proclaim it are a mighty throng. Now that word that the Lord announces is a victory proclamation, and he sends out women. While there remains some controversy in the church over women preaching, the Hebrew here for proclaimers is distinctly feminine. Check out our 1 Timothy 2 B-side for more on that topic. And picture this scene. The women run through the land announcing that enemy kings and armies flee in haste. Victory is here. The passage that follows is tough to translate, so don't get stuck here. It seems that some men are sleeping in the sheep pens who should have been fighting for the Lord. So the women deliver God's victory news to them. Applying it spiritually today, perhaps there's a call here for all of us to step into the battle spiritually. Get on God's mission and fight the good fight. God is moving. Interesting side note, in many places today, women missionaries outnumber men 2-1. In verse 15, the scene returns to David bringing the ark up Mount Zion to the place it will rest. But he sees the majestic mountains of Israel in the distance, and he speaks to them. Why gaze in envy, you rugged mountain, at the mountain where God chooses to reign? Mount Zion is just 2,500 feet, yet David knows the Lord himself will dwell there, and David feels the envy of the lofty mountain peaks in the distance. The tallest peaks in the world cannot compete with God's presence. In verse 17, David sees the countless thousands of chariots of God following the ark from ancient Mount Sinai now to the sanctuary at Zion. And 18 adds to that scene many captives following God up that hill. It's the scene of a victorious return from battle. But Ephesians 4 explains a prophetic meaning. When Jesus ascended after his resurrection, he took captives with him. He rescued us from sin and death, and we join him in victory. Now, in a worldly battle, the defeated army gives gifts to the king who conquers. But Ephesians 4 flips it. Jesus gives us the gifts, and those gifts are gifts of spiritual leadership for the church to go and spread his kingdom. Verse 19 returns to praise to God who bears our burdens and saves. From the sovereign Lord comes escape from death. Now there is the great victory. In verses 21 to 23, God crushes his enemies, and the scene is bloody. Yet remember the real enemy. Our battle is not against flesh and blood. The enemies of our God are darkness and evil, and he will have victory. In verse 24, David sees the victory procession, the procession of my God and King into the sanctuary. Can you see it? Singers and musicians striding forth in celebration. God wins. Can you see that in your life? Women play timbrels and the peoples praise. And in verse 30, scatter the nations who delight in war. If ever we would be confused about God's view of war, remember Ezekiel 18. I take no pleasure in the death of the wicked. There is to be no delight in war. And the nations who get it twisted are here scattered. And as David carries the ark up Zion's hill, his vision stretches far into the future to God's great victory over all wars. and to nations far and wide finding their peace in him. Early echoes of the millennial kingdom are here. In verse 32, sing to God, you kingdoms of the earth. Sing praise to the Lord, to him who rides across the highest heavens, the ancient heavens, who thunders with mighty voice. Proclaim the power of God, whose majesty is over Israel, whose power is in the heavens. You, God, are awesome in your sanctuary. The God of Israel gives power and strength to his people. Praise be to God.
Join us next time as we continue the journey, one chapter at a time. And remember, faith comes by hearing, and hearing through the word.